answer to everything as it is to my elder brother?
Wang Lung saw at once that he was wrong, so he said hastily to excuse himself,
No, no, we will not wed you. But I mean, if there is a slave you desire.
And the boy answered with lofty looks and with dignity, folding his arms on his breast,
I am not the ordinary young man. I have my dreams. I wish for glory. There are women everywhere.
And then, as though he remembered something he had forgotten, he suddenly broke from his dignity, and his arms dropped, and he said in his usual voice,
Besides, there never were an uglier set of slaves than we have. If I cared, but I do not, well, there is not a beauty in the courts except perhaps the little pale maid who waits on the one in the inner courts.
Then Wang knew he spoke of Pear Blossom, and he was smitten with a strange jealousy. He suddenly felt himself older than he was, a man old and too thick of girth and with whitening hair, and he saw his son a man slim and young, and it was not for this moment father and son, but two men, one old and one young. And Wang Lung said angrily,
Now keep off the slaves. I will not have the rotten ways of young lords in my house. We are good stout country folk, and people with decent ways, and none of this in my house.
Then the boy opened his eyes and lifted his black brows and shrugged his shoulders, and he said to his father,
You spoke of it first.
And then he turned away and went out. Then Wang Lung sat there alone in his room by his table, and he felt dreary and alone, and he muttered to himself, Well, and I have no peace anywhere in my house. He was confused with many angers, but although he could not understand why, this anger stood forth most clearly. His son had looked on a little pale young maid in the house and found her fair.
33.
Wang Lung could not cease from his thought of what his youngest son had said of Pear Blossom, and he watched the maid incessantly. She came and went, and without his knowing it, the thought of her filled his mind, and he doted on her. But he said nothing to anyone. One night in the early summer of that year, at the time when the night air is thick and soft with the mists of warmth and fragrance, he sat at rest in his own court, alone under a flowering cassia tree. And the sweet, heavy scent of the cassia flowers filled his nostrils. And he sat there, and his blood ran full and hot like the blood of a young man. Through the day he had felt his blood so, and he had been half of a mind to walk out on his land and feel the good earth under his feet, and take off his shoes and his stockings and feel it on his skin. This he would have done, but he was ashamed lest men see him, who was no longer held a farmer within the gates of the town, but a landowner and a rich man. So he wandered restlessly about the courts, and he stayed away altogether from the court where Lotus sat in the shade and smoked her water pipe, because, well, she knew when a man was restless, and she had sharp eyes to see what was amiss. He went alone then, and he had no mind to see either of his two quarreling daughters-in-law, nor even his grandchildren, in whom was his frequent delight. So the day had passed very long and lonely, and his blood was full and coursing under his skin. He could not forget his youngest son, how he had looked standing, tall and straight, and his black brows drawn together in the gravity of his youth. And he could not forget the maid. And to himself he said,
I suppose they are of an age. The boy must be well on 18, and she is not over 18.
Then he remembered that he himself would, before many years, be 70, and he was ashamed of his coursing blood, and he thought,
It would be a good thing to give the maid to the lad.
And this he said to himself again and again, and every time he said it the thing stabbed, like a thrust, on flesh already sore, and he could not but stab, and yet he could not but feel the pain. And so the day passed, very long and lonely for him. When night came he was still alone, and he sat in his court alone, and there was not one in all his house to whom he could go as friend. And the night air was thick and soft and hot with the smell of the flowers of the cassia tree. And as he sat there in the darkness under the tree, One passed beside where he was sitting, near the gate of his court where the tree stood, and he looked quickly, and it was Pear Blossom.
"Pear Blossom!"
he called, and his voice came in a whisper. She stopped suddenly, her head bent in listening. Then he called again, and his voice would scarcely come from his throat.
"Come here to me."
Then, hearing him, she crept fearfully through the gate and stood before him, and he could scarcely see her standing there in the blackness, but he could feel her there, and he put out his hand and laid hold of her little coat, and he said, half-choking,
"Child."
There he stopped with the word. He said to himself that he was an old man, and it was a disgraceful thing for a man with grandsons and granddaughters nearer to this child's age than he was, and he fingered her little coat. Then she, waiting, caught from him the heat of his blood, and she bent over and slipped like a flower crumpling upon its stalk to the ground, and she clasped his feet and lay there. And he said slowly,
"Child, I am an old man, a very old man."
And she said, and her voice came out of the darkness like the very breath of the cassia tree,
"I like old men. I like old men. They are so kind."
He said again, tenderly, stooping to her a little,
"A little maid like you should have a tall, straight youth, a little maid like you."
And in his heart he added, "like my son," but aloud he could not say it, because he might put the thought into her mind, and he could not bear it.
But she said, "Young men are not kind, they are only fierce."
And hearing her small childish voice quavering up from about his feet, his heart welled up in a great wave of love for this maid. And he took her and raised her gently, and then led her into his own court. When it was done, this love of his age astonished him more than any of his lusts before. For with all his love for Pear Blossom, he did not seize upon her as he had seized upon the others whom he had known. No, he held her gently, and he was satisfied to feel her light youth against his heavy old flesh, and he was satisfied merely with the sight of her in the day, and with the touch of her fluttering coat against his hand, and with the quiet resting of her body near him in the night. And he wondered at the love of old age, which is so fond and so easily satisfied. As for her, she was a passionless maid, and she clung to him as to a father, and to him she was indeed more than half child and scarcely woman. Now the thing that Wang Lung had done did not quickly come out, for he said nothing at all, and why should he, being master in his own house? But the eye of Cuckoo marked it first. And she saw the maid slipping at dawn out of his court, and she laid hold on the girl and laughed, and her old hawk's eyes glittered.
"Well," she said, "and so it is the old lord over again."
And Wang Lung, in his room hearing her, girded his robe about him quickly, and he came out and smiled sheepishly and half-proudly, and he said, muttering,
"Well, and I said she had better take a young lad, and she would have the old one." "It will be a pretty thing to tell the mistress,"
Cuckoo said then, and her eyes sparkled with malice.
"I do not know myself how the thing happened," answered Wang Lung slowly. "I had not meant to add another woman to my courts, and the thing came about of itself."
Then when Cuckoo said, "Well, and the mistress must be told," Wang Lung, fearing the anger of Lotus more than anything, begged Cuckoo, and he said again,
"Do you tell her, if you will, and if you can manage it without anger to my face, I will give you a handful of money for it."
So Cuckoo, still laughing and shaking her head, promised, and Wang Lung went back to his court, and he would not come forth for a while until Cuckoo came back and said,
"Well, and the thing is told." "And she was angry enough until I reminded her she wanted, and has wanted this long time, the foreign clock you promised her. And she will have a ruby ring for her hand and a pair, so that there will be one on each hand. And she will have other things as she thinks of them, and a slave to take Pear Blossom's place. And Pear Blossom is not to come to her any more. And you are not to come soon, either, because the sight of you sickens her."
And Wang Lung promised eagerly, and he said, "Get her what she wills, and I will not begrudge anything." And he was pleased that he need not see Lotus soon, and until anger was cool with the fulfillment of her wishes.
There were left yet his three sons, and he was strangely ashamed before them of what he had done, and he said to himself again and again, "Am I not master in my own house, and may I not take my own slave I bought with my silver?"
But he was ashamed, and yet half proud, too, as one feels himself who is still lusty and a man when others hold him to be only grandfather. And he waited for his sons to come into his court.
They came one by one separately, and the second one came first. Now this one, when he came, talked of the land and of the harvest and of the summer drought which would this year divide the harvest by three. But Wang Lung considered nothing in these days of rain or drought, for if the harvest of the year brought him in little, there was silver left from the year before, and he kept his courts stuffed with silver, and there was money owing to him at the grain markets, and he had much money let out at high interest that his second son collected for him, and he looked no more to see how the skies were over his land. But the second son talked on thus, and as he talked he looked here and there about the rooms with his eyes veiled and secret, and Wang Lung knew that he looked for the maid to see if what he had heard was true. And so he called Pear Blossom from where she hid in the bedroom, and he called out, "Bring me tea, my child, and tea for my son." And she came out, and her delicate pale face was rosy as a peach, and she hung her head and crept about on her little silent feet, and the second son stared at her as if he had heard but could not believe until now. But he said nothing at all except that the land was thus and so, and this tenant and that must be changed at the end of the year, and the other one because he smoked opium and would not gather from the land what it could bear. And Wang Lung asked his son how his children did, and he answered they had the 100 days cough, but it was a slight thing now that the weather was warm. Thus they talked back and forth drinking tea, and the second son took his fill of what he saw, and he went away. And Wang Lung was eased of his second son. Then the eldest son came in before the same day was half over, and he came in tall and handsome and proud with the years of his maturity, and Wang Lung was afraid of his pride, and he did not call out Pear Blossom at first, but he waited and smoked his pipe. The eldest son sat there then stiff with his pride and his dignity, and he asked after the proper manner of his father's health and for his welfare. Then Wang Lung answered quickly and quietly that he was well, and as he looked at his son, his fear went out of him. For he saw his eldest for what he was, a man big in body but afraid of his own town wife, and more afraid of not appearing nobly born than of anything. And the robustness of the land that was strong in Wang Lung, even when he did not know it, swelled up in him, and he was careless again of this eldest son as he had been before, and careless of his proper looks. And he called easily of a sudden to Pear Blossom, "Come, my child, and pour out tea again for another son of mine." This time she came out very cold and still, and her small oval face was white as the flower of her name. Her eyes dropped as she came in, and she moved stilly, and did only what she was told to do, and she went quickly out again. Now the two men had sat silent while she poured the tea, but when she was gone and they lifted their bowls, Wang Lung looked fully into his son's eyes, and he caught there a naked look of admiration, and it was the look of one man who envies another man secretly. Then they drank their tea, and the son said at last in a thick, uneven voice, "I did not believe it was so."
"Why not?" replied Wang Lung tranquilly. "It is my own house."
The son sighed then, and after a time he answered,
"You are rich, and you may do as you like."
And he sighed again, and he said, "Well, I suppose one is not always enough for any man, and there comes a day—" He broke off, but there was in his look the tinge of a man who envies another man against his will, and Wang Lung looked
and laughed in himself, for well he knew his eldest son's lusty nature, and that not forever would the proper town wife he had hold the leash, and some day the man would come forth again. Then the eldest son said no more, but he went his way as a man does who has had a new thought put into his head. And Wang Lung sat and smoked his pipe, and he was proud of himself, that when he was an old man he had done what he wished. But it was night before the youngest son came in, and he came alone also. Now Wang Lung sat in his middle room on the court, and the red candles were lit on the table, and he sat there smoking, and Pear Blossom sat silently on the other side of the table from him, and her hands were folded and quiet in her lap. Sometimes she looked at Wang Lung fully and without coquetry, as a child does, and he watched her and was proud of what he had done. Then suddenly there was his youngest son standing before him, sprung out of the darkness of the court, and no one had seen him enter, but he stood there in some strange, crouching way. And without taking thought of it, Wang Lung was reminded in a flash of memory of a panther he had once seen the men of the village bring in from the hills, where they had caught it. And the beast was tied, but he crouched for a spring, and his eyes gleamed. And the lad's eyes gleamed, and he fixed them upon his father's face. And those brows of his that were too heavy and too black for his youth, he gathered fierce and black above his eyes. Thus he stood, and at last he said in a low and surcharged voice, "Now I will go for a soldier. I will go for a soldier." But he did not look at the girl, only at his father. And Wang Lung, who had not been afraid at all of his eldest son and his second son, was suddenly afraid of this one, whom he had scarcely considered from his birth up. And Wang Lung stammered and muttered and would have spoken, but when he took his pipe from his mouth no sound came, and he stared at his son. And his son repeated again and again, "Now I will go. Now I will go." Suddenly he turned and looked at the girl once, and she looked back at him shrinking, and she took her two hands and put them over her face so that she could not see him. Then the young man tore his eyes from her, and he went in a leap from the room, and Wang Lung looked out into the square of the darkness of the door, open into the black summer night, and he was gone, and there was silence everywhere. At last he turned to the girl, and he said humbly and gently and with a great sadness, and all his pride gone, "I am too old for you, my heart, and well I know it. I am an old, old man." But the girl dropped her hands from her face, and she cried more passionately than he had ever heard her cry, "Young men are so cruel. I like old men best." When the morning came of the next day, Wang Lung's youngest son was gone, and where he was gone no one knew. 34. Then as autumn flares with the false heat of summer before it dies into the winter, so, with the quick love Wang Lung had for Pear Blossom, the brief heat of it passed, and passion died out of him. He was fond of her, but passionless. With the passing of the flame out of him, he was suddenly cold with an age, and he was an old man. Nevertheless, he was fond of her, and it was a comfort to him that she was in his court, and she served him faithfully and with a patience beyond her years. And he was always kind to her with a perfect kindness, and more his love for her was the love of father for daughter. And for his sake she was even kind to his poor fool, and this was comfort to him, so that one day he told her what had long been in his mind. Now Wang Lung had thought many times of what would come to his poor fool when he was dead, and there was not another one except himself who cared whether she lived or starved. And so he had bought a little bundle of white poisonous stuff at the medicine shop, and he had said to himself that he would give it to his fool to eat when he saw his own death was near. But still he dreaded this more than the hour of his own death, and it was a comfort to him now when he saw Pear Blossom was faithful. So he called her to him one day, and he said, "There is none other but you to whom I can leave this poor fool of mine when I am gone. And she will live on and on after me, seeing that her mind has no troubles of its own, and she has nothing to kill her, no trouble to worry her.
And, well, I know that no one will trouble when I am gone to feed her or to bring her out of the rain and the cold of winter or to set her in the summer sun. And she will be sent out to wander on the street, perhaps. This poor thing, who has had care all her life from her mother and from me. Now, here is a gate of safety for her in this packet, and when I die after I am dead, you are to mix it in her rice and let her eat it, that she may follow me where I am, and so shall I be at ease.
But Pear Blossom shrank from the thing he held in his hand, and she said in her soft way, I can scarcely kill an insect, and how could I take this life? No, my lord, but I will take this poor fool for mine, because you have been kind to me, kinder than any in all my life, and the only kind one.
And Wang Lung could have wept for what she said, because no one had ever requited him like this, and his heart clung to her, and he said,
Nevertheless, take it, my child, for there is none I trust as I do you, but even you must die one day, although I cannot say the words. And after you there is none, no, not one. And well I know my sons' wives are too busy with their children and their quarrels, and my sons are men and cannot think of such things.
So when she saw his meaning, Pear Blossom took the packet from him and said no more. And Wang Lung trusted her and was comforted for the fate of his poor fool. Then Wang Lung withdrew more and more into his age, and he lived much alone except for these two in his courts, his poor fool and Pear Blossom. Sometimes he roused himself a little, and he looked at Pear Blossom, and he was troubled, and said,
This is too quiet a life for you, my child.
But she always answered gently and in great gratitude,
It is quiet and safe.
And sometimes he said again,
I am too old for you, and my fires are ashes.
But she always answered with great thankfulness,
You are kind to me, and more I do not desire of any man.
Once when she said this, Wang Lung was curious, and he asked her,
What was it in your tender years that made you thus fearful of men?
And looking at her for answer, he saw a great terror in her eyes, and she covered them with her hands, and she whispered,
Every man I hate except you. I have hated every man. Even my father, who sold me, I have heard only evil of them, and I hate them all.
And he said, wondering,
Now I should have said you had lived quietly and easily in my courts.
I am filled with loathing, she said, looking away. I am filled with loathing, and I hate them all. I hate all young men.
And she would say nothing more, and he mused on it. And he did not know whether Lotus had filled her with tales of her life and had threatened her, or whether Cuckoo had frightened her with lewdness, or whether something had befallen her secretly that she would not tell him, or what it was. But he sighed and gave over his questions, because above everything now he would have peace, and he wished only to sit in his court near these two. So Wang Lung sat, and so his age came on him day by day and year by year, and he slept fitfully in the sun, as his father had done, and he said to himself that his life was done, and he was satisfied with it. Sometimes, but seldom, he went into the other courts, and sometimes, but more seldom, he saw Lotus, and she never mentioned the maid he had taken, but she greeted him well enough, and she was old, too, and satisfied with the food and the wine she loved, and with the silver she had for the asking. She and Cuckoo sat together now, after these many years, as friends, and no longer as mistress and servant, and they talked of this and that, and most of all the old days with men. And they whispered together of things they would not speak aloud, and they ate and drank and slept and woke to gossip again before eating and drinking. And when Wang Lung went, and it was very seldom, into his son's courts, they treated him courteously, and they ran to get tea for him, and he asked to see the last child, and he asked many times, for he forgot easily,
How many grandchildren have I now?
And one answered him readily, 11 sons and 8 daughters have your sons together.
And he, chuckling and laughing, said back, add 2 each year, and I know the number, is it so?
Then he would sit a little while and look at the children gathering around him to stare. His grandsons were tall lads now, and he looked at them, peering at them to see what they were, and he muttered to himself,
now that one has the look of his great-grandfather. And there is a small merchant Liu. Oh, and here is myself when young.
And he asked them,
do you go to school?
Yes, grandfather, they answered in a scattered chorus. And he said again,
do you study the 4 books?
Then they laughed with clear young scorn at a man so old as this, and they said,
no, grandfather, and no one studies the 4 books since the revolution.
And he answered, musing,
ah, I have heard of a revolution, but I have been too busy in my life to attend to it. There was always the land.
But the lad snickered at this, and at last Wang Lung rose, feeling himself, after all, but a guest in his son's courts. Then, after a time, he went no more to see his sons. But sometimes he would ask Cuckoo,
and are my 2 daughters-in-law at peace after all these years? And Cuckoo spat upon the ground, and she said, those, they are at peace like 2 cats eyeing each other. But the eldest son wearies of his wife's complaints of this and that, too proper a woman for a man she is, and always talking of what they did in the house of her father, and she wearies a man. There is talk of his taking another. He goes often to the tea-shops.
Ah, said Wang Long. But when he would have thought of it, his interest in the matter waned, and before he knew it he was thinking of his tea, and that the young spring wind smote cold upon his shoulders. And another time he said to Cuckoo,
does any ever hear from that youngest son of mine where he is gone this long time?
And Cuckoo answered, for there was nothing she did not know in these courts,
well, and he does not write a letter, but now and then one comes from the south, and it is said he is a military official, and great enough in a thing they call a revolution there. But what it is, I do not know. Perhaps some sort of business.
And again Wang Lung said, ah. And he would have thought of it, but the evening was falling, and his bones ached, and the air left raw and chill when the sun withdrew. For his mind now went where it would, and he could not hold it long to any one thing. And the needs of his old body for food and for hot tea were more keen than for anything. But at night, when he was cold, Pear Blossom lay warm and young against him, and he was comforted in his age with her warmth in his bed. Thus spring wore on again and again, and vaguely and more vaguely as these years passed, he felt it coming. But still one thing remained to him, and it was his love for his land. He had gone away from it, and he had set up his house in a town, and he was rich, but his roots were in his land. And although he forgot it for many months together, when spring came each year, he must go out onto the land. And now, although he could no longer hold a plow or do anything but see another drive the plow through the earth, still he must needs go. And he went. Sometimes he took a servant and his bed, and he slept again in the old earthen house and in the old bed where he had begotten children and where Olan had died. When he woke in the dawn, he went out, and with his trembling hands he reached and plucked a bit of budding willow and a spray of peach bloom, and held them all day in his hand. Thus he wandered one day in a late spring near summer, and he went over his fields a little way, and he came to the enclosed place upon a low hill where he had buried his dead. He stood trembling on his staff, and he looked at the graves, and he remembered them, every one. They were more clear to him now than the sons who lived in his own house, more clear to him than anyone except his poor fool and except Pear Blossom. And his mind went back many years, and he saw it all clearly, even his little second daughter, of whom he had heard nothing for longer than he could remember. And he saw her a pretty maid as she had been in his house, her lips as thin and red as a shred of silk, and she was to him like these who lay here in the land.
And he mused, and he thought suddenly, "Well, and I shall be the next."
Then he went into the enclosure, and he looked carefully, and he saw the place where he would lie, below his father and his uncle, and above Ching, and not far from Olan. And he stared at the bit of earth where he was to lie, and he saw himself in it, and back in his own land forever. And he muttered, "I must see to the coffin." This thought he held fast and painfully in his mind, and he went back to the town, and he sent for his eldest son, and he said,
"There is something I have to say."
"Then say on," answered the son, "I am here." But when Wang Lung would have said, he suddenly could not remember what it was. And the tears stood in his eyes because he had held the matter so painfully in his mind, and now it slipped willfully away from him. So he called Pear Blossom, and he said to her,
"Child, what was it I wanted to say?"
And Pear Blossom answered gently,
"Where were you this day?"
"I was upon the land,"
Wang Lung replied, waiting, his eyes fixed on her face.
And she asked gently again,
"On what piece of land?"
Then suddenly the thing flew into his mind again, and he cried, laughing out of his wet eyes,
"Well, and I do remember. My son, I have chosen my place in the earth, and it is below my father and his brother, and above your mother and next to Ching, and I will see my coffin before I die."
Then Wang Lung's eldest son cried out dutifully and properly,
"Do not say that word, my father, but I will do as you say."
Then his son bought a carved coffin hewn from a great log of fragrant wood, which is used to bury the dead in, and for nothing else, because that wood is as lasting as iron, and more lasting than human bones. And Wang Lung was comforted, and he had the coffin brought into his room, and he looked at it every day. Then all of a sudden he thought of something, and he said,
"Well, and I would have it moved out to the earthen house, and there I will live out my few days, and there I will die."
And when they saw how he had set his heart, they did what he wished. And he went back to the house on his land, he and Pear Blossom and the Fool, and what servants they needed. And Wang Lung took up his abode again on his land, and he left the house in the town to the family he had founded. Spring passed, and summer passed into harvest, and in the hot autumn sun before winter comes, Wang Lung sat where his father had sat against the wall, and he thought no more about anything now except his food and his drink and his land. But of his land he thought no more what harvest it would bring, or what seed would be planted, or of anything except the land itself. And he stooped sometimes and gathered some of the earth up in his hand, and he sat thus and held it in his hand, and it seemed full of life between his fingers. And he was content holding it thus, and he thought of it fitfully, and of his good coffin that was there, and the kind earth waited without haste until he came to it. His sons were proper enough to him, and they came to him every day, or at most once in 2 days, and they sent him delicate food fit for his age, but he liked best to have one stir up meal in hot water and sup it as his father had done. Sometimes he complained a little of his sons if they came not every day, and he said to Pear Blossom, who was always near him,
"Well, and what are they so busy about?"
But if Pear Blossom said,
"They are in the prime of life, and now they have many affairs. Your eldest son has been made an officer in the town among the rich men, and he has a new wife, and your second son is setting up a great grain market for himself."
Wang Lung listened to her, but he could not comprehend all this, and he forgot it as soon as he looked out over his land. But one day he saw clearly for a little while. It was a day on which his two sons had come, and after they had greeted him courteously, they went out and they walked about the house onto the land. Now Wang Lung followed them silently, and they stood, and he came up to them slowly, and they did not hear the sound of his footsteps nor the sound of his staff on the soft earth, And Wang Long heard his second son say in his mincing voice,
"This field we will sell, and this one, and we will divide the money between us evenly. Your share I will borrow at good interest, for now, with the railroad straight through, I can ship rice to the sea, and I—"
But the old man heard only these words, "Sell the land," and he cried out, and he could not keep his voice from breaking and trembling with his anger,
"Now, evil, idle sons, sell the land!"
He choked and would have fallen, and they caught him and held him up, and he began to weep. Then they soothed him, and they said, soothing him,
"No, no, we will never sell the land. It is the end of a family when they begin to sell the land,"
he said brokenly.
"Out of the land we came, and into it we must go, and if you will hold your land, you can live. No one can rob you of land."
And the old man let his scanty tears dry upon his cheeks, and they made salty stains there. And he stooped and took up a handful of the soil, and he held it, and he muttered,
"If you sell the land, it is the end."
And his two sons held him, one on either side, each holding his arm. And he held tight in his hand the warm, loose earth, and they soothed him. And they said over and over, the elder son and the second son, "Rest assured, our father, rest assured, the land is not to be sold." But over the old man's head they looked at each other and smiled. This concludes the reading of The Good Earth by Pearl S. Buck. Copyright 1931 by Pearl S. Buck. Copyright renewed 1958 by Pearl S. Buck. This book was read by Anthony Heald. This unabridged recording was published by arrangement with Harold Ober Associates and was produced in 2007 by Blackstone Audio Incorporated, which holds the copyright. Neither this recording nor any portion of it may be reproduced or used for any purpose without prior written authorization from Blackstone Audio Incorporated.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.